Hello and welcome to the Donor Egg Mama podcast for soul-led intended parents considering a donor egg pathway and parents of donor egg conceived children. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, a qualified fertility coach and proud donor egg mama. I'm just an all mum that went on an extraordinary journey to conceive. I hope this podcast helps you in some way to break free from emotional overwhelm, face your fears, and find the courage to move forward and bring that baby that's on your heart into your reality. Let's talk openly about our emotions and all topics donor egg IVF. Thanks for listening.
Hello, and welcome back to the Donor Egg Mama podcast and series two, Donor Egg Mama Talks, Stories of Hope and Inspiration. I'm your host, Adele O'Connor, IVF warrior and proud donor egg mama. Recently, I advertised the fantastic Facebook group, Egg Donor Baby Mamas, Pregnancy and Beyond, and I got a wonderful response from women in that group who were willing to share their story to parenthood via egg donation to help those on the journey behind them. Today's guest is Cassandra. She's a mum to two stepkids that live in a different country, one own egg child, who's almost seven, and one donor egg conceived child who's almost 1 year old. She had six losses between age 36 and 38 after having her first son with no issues, treatments, or any complications at 34. So she says, really, she's a mum to eight with two amazing boys that live with her. Her and her husband run a small preschool program together, and she's a bereavement doula. And she started a donor egg doula website. Cassandra shares my passion in helping others and has helped women over the last couple of years that have reached out to feel less alone and to help them find what works best for them and their family. A link to her website, donoreggdoula.com, will be in the show notes. So please go and check out Cassandra's service. So I'll hand over to Cassandra now. And I guess I want to first of all find out, Cassandra's had a huge journey to complete her family. So Cassandra, can you tell me about how you came to find your donor and what was the turning point for you to use an egg donor?
Right. Yes. So I first was spoken to about using an egg donor by my OB when I was 36 after, I think, my third loss. And it was just thrown out there and I had never heard of it before. So it was very alien, and I had no way to understand or process. It was just like he said, you would need a donor egg to have a baby, basically. Yeah. But he said to keep trying because I was getting pregnant, and they just thought maybe when the right egg comes along, it'll. So I did everything from it all starts with the egg book, and I followed the advanced plan. I was really into fitness, has always been a big thing for me. And I cut back on my exercise. So I did that and I had my AMH almost tripled. It was still really low, but I was seeing, even my OB is like, you could just get pregnant on your own now. Like you, and wow. I had been doing letrozole and trigger. Yeah. So I was seeing some improvement, and it could have been like my vitamin D levels were low enough, but still, it was good. So I did that, and I went into, we looked into IVF locally, but we were quoted, I think it was $39,000 for one round, like US dollars. It was crazy.
Wow.
And yeah, so we looked at all around, and we looked at CNY, and CNY has locations all over the country. It was $4,000. But we would have to get the medics. It was, everything was separate. So we would have to get monitoring done locally. So it wasn't just $4,000 and then the travel, but it still was considerably less.
Sure.
So the risk was less. And during my consult with them, they said you can add on donor eggs. So we could have done a donor egg add-on and that would have been a lot less, but I just wasn't there yet. I was like, sure. I don't want to be. And I was like, I think maybe it'll work. My AMH was better. I felt good. I hadn't drank caffeine in a year. I was like, things have to be better, right?
Yeah.
So we went into it, and long story short, I got one egg, and it fertilized, and then day five, it ended up just arresting. So literally at the time of the retrieval, I went in and I said goodbye to my son and my husband, did the retrieval, and they told me when I woke up that I had one egg. And I was like, can I do donor eggs? Like, I need to get, and it was literally when I was like off of the anesthesia, and I felt so guilty and I felt so bad for spending the money on all the meds. It was like $5,000 for the meds, travel with my son. So I took my son for a hike, and even though I was supposed to like rest, I didn't feel bad. And we went on like an hour hike in Colorado. It was really pretty. I was like, I'm just going to make the best in this. And they were great. CNY, they connected me with the donor coordinator like the next day.
Amazing.
I felt really bad. And then they took off like some of the price, and we were connected with them. We did a consult, I think, 5 days later. And literally the day I found out that the egg had arrested, we were looking at donors. So even though it was emotional for us, we were done. And we felt like we had done all we could. And that obviously our oldest son was like a miracle. That
yeah.
Thank God I had him waited. We looked into the donor eggs. And one thing that I was looking at different donors, I'm like, I don't even know how to do this. So I read the book. I think it's called Let's Talk About Egg Donation. And they had some excellent points in there about what to look for in a donor and not to just look for yourself, even though that's valid.
Yeah.
But being really picky and looking just for your, like, oh, I want it to be me, can be never enough for you.
It's good advice. And it's something that people can get really hung up on, I think.
Yeah. And then it's also, it'll never be you.
No.
In good ways and bad ways. So, for me, like the good thing was this baby is obviously my genetic material wasn't holding up anymore. And when I was pregnant with my donor egg son, I worried so much less.
Yeah.
Even when I had some confirmation, like it was a relief because seeing like having a positive pregnancy test was actually really, I felt anxious when I would get a positive because I'd been pregnant so much, right?
Like,
oh my gosh, like, be like, how's this going to end? And I would try to have hope, but I also felt, this is going to really hurt? And it would.
Yeah.
So when I got the positive, I was like, actually, wow, this is different. Like, I did something different. And it's like scientifically proven to have a better outcome. And I thought about when I was pregnant with my first son and how easy it all was. And I like, I was younger then, and a lot of things with my donor pregnancy were just so much better, especially the last half of it. I was back to running. I wasn't lifting really hard, but I could do like fun workouts and go around and lift things. And that was great. But my failed IVF was the thing that got me into finding an egg donor. And it was hard for me to find one that wasn't like where it wasn't number 14 on the list or where I would say, oh, this person seems great. And then they would send me all the genetic carrier stuff that they had. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I thought, no, if it was like 3 or 4, but it was like sometimes 20. So I asked them, I said, okay, can you give me the numbers of people that have maybe low lists, aren't carriers for a bunch of things, are proven donors or have kids and just like overall healthy, that kind of thing. They sent me 3 numbers and I looked over with my husband and there was one that was like perfect. I'm like, how did we miss this person? She has kids. I loved her attitude where her aunt had fertility issues. That's why she was donating. She has kids. Like, I think now that I know her, she just had her 5th child, but she seems super nice. And I was like, I really want like a good person, obviously, but you can have a great education and all this other stuff. But I'm like, seems like her heart's really in the right place and she probably won't regret doing this.
Yeah. That's amazing. So Cassandra, this was all through CNY, is that right?
Yeah.
So they've got their own database of donors.
Yes, they do a lot. And 99% of them are in New York. So we confirmed her as our donor the middle of August. And she donated, I think it was late September.
Okay.
And then we got 8 fresh eggs and 3 of them fertilized, which we were really like, oh my gosh, it's only 3. But we froze them day 3 and they did turn, they turned into great embryos. We transferred 2 and 1 stuck and 1's our little Charlie. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really crazy. But I'm glad that we did fresh eggs because the donor coordinator really pushed us. She's, no, don't do baked eggs. And when we only had 3, I was freaking out and I sent her a message. And she said, I pulled the baked eggs from for retrieval and I'm just going to hold them for you. There were like 4 of them. She's like, I'll just hold them. We'll see what happens with these 3. And if they all make it, then I'm going to put the baked eggs. She's, I'll talk to you about it. No questions. Like, she offered it. I didn't even say anything. And she said, yeah, the founding physician, Dr. Kiltz, he is really good with this stuff. Because we didn't have any male factor and I didn't expect them all to fertilize, but I was like, 3, like I've been pregnant a bunch of times and my eggs are, so I was a little worried, but they did, the quality of the embryo seemed good from what embryology showed us and what, you know, obviously one of them was very good. So they're
yes,
here right now.
Yeah. But I had a similar story, Cassandra. We had the whole cohort of eggs from our donor, and I think we ended up with 4 mature eggs, and I think 2 went all the way to embryos. And I was like, oh my gosh, I've traveled all the way to South Africa, and I've got embryos. How's this going to work out? And there was 1 that was okay, obviously, and that's my son.
Oh, yeah.
So I totally understand that fear after everything you've been through, and obviously the financial loss as well is huge. And then to get to that point of, you had that expectation of having maybe quite a few to bank if you needed, to back up some
of
you. So yeah, I totally understand that. And for your donor, how did that come about? Was it always a open ID or known donor scenario, or how did that
come
around?
So with CNY, they're all anonymous.
Yeah.
But there is a CNY unofficial page that's run by a donor.
Yeah.
And it's a donor recipient match page. I asked the donor coordinator if I could write a letter and send it to our donor just to thank her.
Sure.
And there were some things in her profile, like she really loves the Eiffel Tower. She's not been there, but I do oil painting and acrylic painting. So I did an oil painting of the Eiffel Tower for her. Cause I'm like, I can't send you there, but I wish I could. But so I wanted her to have it to look at. And then we sent a letter and some drawings from our son. He always prayed for, he always wanted twins, had a boy and a girl. And he named them Olivia and what was it? Odin. So we sent that in there. We couldn't have anything identifying us on there, so our names or where we lived, just like around, I said Midwest. But we sent that, and I got her a necklace and some earrings with her birthstone and on it. It was just something that was nice, but not anything crazy. And then she sent us a letter back. She ended up posting in this group about it on her retrieval day, because that's when she got it from the coordinator. And I posted that she had a retrieval and that I hope she got the gifts that we'd sent. The donor or the recipient after us contacted us and said, I think I know who your donor is because we're next in line after you. And she said she posted her donor number on a page and this is what she wrote. And she didn't, like, she screenshotted it and edited out her name. So I didn't know. And I really didn't know who I really wanted to know her. But for some reason, I was just like, what if she like doesn't like us? Like, we chose her, but what if she's, what if I like offend her if she looks at my Facebook thing and there's something on there? Or so I ended up just sitting on it for a few days and thanking the person. I'm like, I'd love to be in touch with you. If we have babies, then you're okay with that. However you want that relationship to be, that's fine. I'm not going to show up at your house or something. So it was really nice to be in touch with her. And then after we got the fertilization report and I think it was something else. I ended up reaching out to her and just thanking her on Facebook. And then we were going back and forth quite a bit. And it was really cool. The day that I went for my transfer, she was like texting me, like, I really hope this goes well. And I've been praying for you and blah, blah, blah. It was really nice. And all my appointments, like my OB appointments, like she would say, ask me how it went and like that she was so happy. I would send her photos of the sonograms. And then she got pregnant. She really wanted to have my last kid, number five. But she did a pregnancy test. And I think I was the first person she told. And she was the first person I told when I found out that we were pregnant because my husband was taking a nap. He's taking a nap. So I'm going to tell you. She was like elated. We were both like, oh my gosh. Could she send the first presents to her? She sent it and she said she feels more like an aunt.
Yeah.
And then the recipient after us also got pregnant. So she had her baby. So now he has two younger siblings. So it's cool. We all know each other.
Oh, I'm jealous. I would love that for myself.
That's so beautiful. Yeah. And you know what? You've inspired me because I think I need to set up a Facebook group for my own kind of agency to see if I can find more directly that way. And so many people are doing that. And I think it's a great way to at least find siblings, if not the donor. Obviously, I respect her anonymity.
Yeah.
But if she wants to connect, then that would be amazing. Unfortunately, where we did it in South Africa, the legislation is anonymous, as is for many people in many different countries. So that's such a beautiful, heartwarming story. How wonderful and amazing that you were able to connect and
navigate that journey as it happens.
Yeah, it was one of those things where going into it, I never thought that I would find connection I have with, not just with my donor and the next recipient, but just with other women going through and families. And some of them aren't even that far away from me. Like on the Egg Donor Mama's Facebook page, I had asked if there was anyone in our state where we live, if there were any people that lived by me. And one woman reached out to me. She had a surrogate. And it turns out that I went to the clinic that she worked at, and her surrogate's OB was my OB's wife. So my OB has a wife that also is an OB. And I literally saw her yesterday when I went in for an appointment. So we ask about our kids, and it's just crazy how you just don't know. She's really open about it and about her journey. But I think that's one thing I didn't realize. I was so sad initially at losing my genetic connections. And it was really hard. But as time went on, I was more and more grateful that I could do it, that I could have another baby, like that I could be pregnant again. And know what we looked at adopting, but here, where we live, the state we live in, the mom has 30 days to change her mind. And I know people who've had their babies taken away because their mom is cheap. And it's so expensive. It was more expensive than CNY would have been. So I think a lot of people think, oh, just adopt. Like, you can just go get a puppy and it's not money or less. And it's really not like that. We do daycare. We already go through so many things where we have, which is completely understandable. I have no problem with it. But I couldn't imagine having more of it in my life. Sure. Like, I love this. This is our son. Legally, I don't, like, with our donor, I don't have concerns. She's said, hey, I gave you one cell and you guys built the rest. She's very sweet. It's like, do a little more than that. You had to do all the shots. And you had to. But I'm lucky that she's very respectful. And even with her kids, she's, can I show them pictures? Is that okay? And I'm like, of course, if they ever want to talk to him, they can. Her older son was really interested. And I was like, yeah, if you ever want to do FaceTime and, you know, anything, we're here and we'd be happy to.
That's so beautiful. That's so beautiful. And yeah, for everyone listening, I'm talking to Cassandra, and you probably heard her beautiful son in the podcast, and he is adorable, absolutely adorable. The most smiliest. He's looking at me now, a curious little boy, absolutely gorgeous. So I think it's just so heartwarming to hear these stories. And yeah, I've done a couple of podcasts where these beautiful children are there, and it's just lovely to see such absolute love and from these mums that have gone through so much to finally get this beautiful boy in your arms. Yeah, it's just wonderful. And Cassandra, I'm just curious, you're a bereavement doula. How has this whole journey impacted you and, yeah, with the whole grief that you've been through yourself?
I think it's made me... I never assume that I know as much about other people as I did before. And I think everybody is going through something or has been through something, especially working with children. I get told when people are expecting probably before a lot of people do, especially here. There's just such a shortage in providers. And I've seen people go through loss. And for me, it was after having so many losses, and I never really took a lot of time because I work with kids, and I know that it would be really hard for people here to lose a week, right? And I always thought, I want to keep my vacation for when I have my baby, right? So it wasn't like, I'm going to take a week. So I didn't. And I, looking back, I wish I would have. I think I would have been better for everyone around me if I would have acknowledge my grief more. And even after having my son, yeah, he's my rainbow baby, but it doesn't mean that all the other ones don't mean something. And a big part of my journey was, I think, realizing, what if I go through this and I don't have a baby? Who am I going to be? Cool. What will this do to me? And being like, I need to be okay with that. I need to come out a better person. For not hold my breath for a baby because, hey, I have three embryos. It might not happen. What kind of mom am I going to be? What kind of daycare provider? Like, how will I live in my own skin? So for me, I looked at it, like I tried to look at it. If I was training for a marathon, I knew I wasn't going to win. Like, how am I still going to come out of this? So I would try to make it more about becoming a better person and becoming healthier. So that way I can carry that with me. Even if yeah. I don't up with a baby. So I think that really helped me in my family. And then as far as the bereavement stuff goes, I realized that after having him, I listened to, like, someone mentioned about Taylor Swift. There's a song called Bigger Than the Whole Sky or something. And I listened to it and I just cried so much. And I realized I wasn't done. Like, I'm not done grieving those losses. And I might... Those losses led me to having a beautiful boy and beautiful connections with others. Oh, buddy, I'm so sorry. So I have to acknowledge it. Like, I have to hold that so I can hold what I've also gained and really celebrate. So it's a tough balance, but I like being there for others because I think it's so hard for people to stand with other people in grief, especially with... like really hard losses, like kids, you just don't know what to say.
Oh, Cassandra, just everything you said is just so potent, so powerful. And yeah, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom. Yeah, I resonate with everything you said. And I did a podcast myself about how hidden this grief is, one of the fertility journey, because yeah, it's, yeah, nobody wants to talk about it. It's awkward for other people to hear. And it takes a special person to be able to hold space for someone in grief. And it's not the societal norm for us to even be vulnerable and open about it with people. Yeah, thank you so much for the beautiful work that you do as a bereavement doula. Such a huge, important part of the society. I feel like your little man
is losing it.
We need you. So thank you for everything you've shared with me. I think everything you shared is just absolutely perfect. And I really appreciate it. And I'll let you go. But Cassandra, we'll definitely chat again. I'd love to continue the conversation another time.
Okay. Yeah, that would be terrific. And I'm always here if you need anything. Okay.
Oh, you're beautiful. Yeah. Thank you so much. Dear listeners, if you enjoyed this episode, you might want to join my community membership program. This is a membership subscription for women worldwide. Whether you are an intended parent considering a donor egg pathway or in the thick of the journey and pregnancy, this is an opportunity for you to be connected with others and coached by me on your journey. The membership includes regular live interactive Zoom calls, Q&As, womb healing, workshops and more, providing you with the tools to help you break free from overwhelm, to help you feel less alone on your journey, fast track your knowledge and give you the support you need to move forward and help bring the baby that's on your heart and into your arms. If this sounds like something that would help you, please check out my website, www.donoreggmama.com, or follow me on Instagram at donoreggmama. The links, as always, are in the show notes. Sending love and bye for now.